Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Now that Maggie. Back in town. Look out, old man.
Yeah.
Back. Chris McMartin.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.
The Fan.
WFAN.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. 202 on the Fan. McMonagle here with you on this Wednesday morning. 888-808-1019. Taking your calls for the next 3 hours as we got you to the warm-up show at 5. Fleegs on the other side. And here we are. We'll get to the baseball. You know we're going to because the Yankee shill's happy after a decisive explosion of offense in the late innings for the New York Yankees as they score 10 in the 7th inning. We'll get to the Mets as they lose the second game of the series against Arizona. Both teams will be looking for a rubber match victory. But we're going to start with the New York Knicks. Everything Knicks, baby! Because this game, too, is what we just witnessed, and you heard Marco talk about it, as the Pacers, who were down, I think they were down as many as 20 points in this game, come back and take game two in Cleveland, 120-119. We know they're banged up. Obviously, they're missing three of their starters, Cleveland and, you know, Spider Mitchell can only do so much, but I mean, to blow the game the way they did with a double-digit lead going into the fourth, up by 7 with, like, under a minute, they miss a ton of free throws and get beat by a Halliburton dagger, 120-119. And as we get ready for this game number 2, Boston against New York, I don't know if the Knicks are going to be able to come away with a victory. This is going to be a very difficult game. There's no doubt about it. But here's a couple of things I want to say. One, and now we are hearing that Porzingis is probable for game 2. I would imagine Porzingis, at the very least, is going to give it a go. And he obviously makes a huge difference in this series, in this matchup, in this game. I want to dispel the idea, like, there is no such thing as house money. Right, I want to make sure this game is extremely important. You go into these games, and I know you head into a series from a bird's eye view of 1,000 feet away, and you say, take one of the first two. Get the split, head home with the, you know, home court advantage for the rest of the series. You got to get that split. You got to get that split. That's all fine and good. But what you have to do, especially with this game for the Knicks, and what I find interesting as I'm listening to Brian Windhorst on ESPN, and I'm listening to a lot of the other, you know, talking heads throughout what we do here, not even necessarily this station, but ESPN, that's so, you know, that covers basketball as pronounced as they do, and everything. And there's this feeling, there's a feeling going around, and obviously you understand it because the Celtics are a heavy favorite in this series and still are the favorite to win the series. But there is a, I'm listening to Colin Cowherd call it the most boring and meaningless game one upset that he's ever seen. You're listening to Brian Windhorst. He's just, well, listen, it's one of those, they missed every shot. And, you know, the Knicks really haven't beaten anybody like this all season long. And, you know, I understand it was an amazing comeback and Brunson's great. But really, like, you have to stamp game one with your game two performance. This Knicks team has to come out in game two and show the Celtics that game one wasn't a fluke. That it's not just about how poorly they played, how poorly they shot. Oh, they lost Porzingis. Oh, you know, listen, ultimately, they're so far a superior team. Even Evans saying they're going to win the next four games. I think a lot of people feel that way. I think the Celtics, and listening to them talk, think they didn't play well. It's the NBA playoffs. Everyone's tough. But ultimately, they believe themselves to be the far superior team in this matchup. Game one wasn't enough. When you do it by missing 45 three-pointers, when you do it by blowing a 20-point lead, when you do it without Porzingis as he has to leave the game, when you do it the way game one looked, many people believe there is a fluky nature to that game. And so when you head into this, when you're the Knicks, and you look at the issues you had, there's plenty of moments and things to go over to make the Knicks better in this game. There are things the Knicks can do better. It's not just about how the Celtics failed. Karl Anthony Towns has to be a hell of a lot better in game number two. They can be a hell of a lot more efficient from the free throw line in game number two. They can eliminate a lot of the pointless and lazy turnovers that we saw in game number one. There's a lot of things the Knicks can improve on, despite going on the run they did in the second half, despite finishing off the game in overtime. Mikal Bridges, as great as he played, and I know we got into the debate of how many picks. I said it last night, he's worth every pick off of that one overtime performance. Every pick he was traded for is now, I'm glad to pay it for what he gave them in the overtime. Even he could be more efficient offensively, only 8 points in the game. There are ways the Knicks can be a lot better than they were in game one as well. Now, every road team in the NBA playoffs thus far has won the game. They are 5-0, underdogs, 5-0. Two from the Pacers, one from everybody else. It is time to go back into that building tonight at 7 o'clock and stamp the first game of this series. Would I love them to win? Of course. Right? Will at the end of it, if they lose this game, will I come out of it with most Knicks fans come out of it saying, hey, we got the split. Got the one game they absolutely needed. They came away from these first two games accomplishing what had to be accomplished. They got one victory. We head back home tied. We did what we had to do. Yeah, I'll probably be saying that. But that doesn't change the fact that they can't allow this game to look like the regular season games again. Like, we could talk all we want after game one, and we were pumped up, and we were excited, and coming off that victory, the biggest victory we've had since 1999. And we're all pumped about it, and to come back from 20 points down, and to watch the way they played down the stretch, and the three consecutive threes that we got from our hero, Jalen Brunson, and the way Mitch Robinson, and the way Mikal Bridges played in the overtime, and we were pumped, and it was a great win. But as we get a day away from it, you start to realize that it's probably not enough to put a real fear into this Boston Celtic team. And that game, if this one goes the way they have in the regular season, or the first half of game one is what continues throughout game number two. If they head into Boston and get their asses kicked in game number two, yes, they've accomplished what we needed to accomplish. From a series standpoint, they got the one win, you head back tied, and you try and win your home games and take this series in six. Sure, sounds great, sounds wonderful. But if they go into this game tonight and don't show up, if they go into this game tonight and get their asses kicked, if they go into this game tonight and it's 20 at the half and it's 27 at the end of three, and this game is meaningless and Tibbs gets to play all the bench at the end of the fourth quarter, the feeling around game number one is going to start to feel fluky. And the Boston Celtics, who have been a better road team all year, a better road team in the playoffs, is going to head into Madison Square Garden, where the Knicks have lost two out of three so far this year against the Detroit Pistons, with a tremendous amount of confidence. The Knicks have to stamp game one with a dogfight in game number two. I don't know if they have to win it. Clearly, I don't think they have to win it. It would really put a stranglehold on this series. And then that change, if they go out and win this game. I mean, I'm not even talking about that because I'm not trying to get too ahead of myself. But if the Knicks go out and win this game, well, now everything changes and no one can say a thing. And the series clearly shifts, the momentum being in the Knicks' favor, and the Celtics are in real trouble. Right, you change the entire series without question, undisputed. No one could argue it. The series completely shifts. The Knicks are no longer the underdog in the series they go out and win tonight. But even if they can't pull off the upset, even if this Boston team, who is desperate for a win in their building, who needs the game worse than the Knicks, even if they can't get over the threshold and win this basketball game, they have got to make a fight of it. They have got to be there. This game has to come down to the last few minutes. They've got to put the fear. They've got to give their closer, Jalen Brunson, a chance to steal game number two, a chance to change the discourse of this series. They've got to have that opportunity. This has to be a hard-fought game, and we still need to see adjustments, right? We need to see how the coach is going to handle this Hakimich thing, and we're going to see maybe if that means playing Achiuwa. Like, there are things that we still have to see them change. We know the Boston Celtics will make changes. Like, this is now a swing game in this series, but number one, and we talk about how much that Pistons series helped harden them. And I think we can eliminate the idea of this team being soft. We can eliminate the idea of this team not being together. We can eliminate the idea of this team not having the same chemistry or toughness or tenacity or fortitude or other platitude you want to bring up than compare them to last year's team. This team has it. They showed it in the Pistons series. They showed it in game one of this series. They have to show it again in game two. There has to be a level of fear in the fourth quarter. They have to come out of this game knowing it's a series, because it's easy to laugh off 45 missed threes. It's an easy number to point to. It's an easy thing to just say, hey, look, we played like crap. We missed every one of our shots. It's all right. And that will be the narrative moving forward into Madison Square Garden if the Knicks get their ass kicked. But if the Knicks stand firm, if the Knicks put another scare into the Boston Celtics, if this game is down to the wire, if they play the perimeter defensively as well as they played it in game one, if the Celtics again shoot an ungodly number of missed three-pointers, if there is an element of we are seeing the same thing for a second consecutive game, now it becomes fact. Now it becomes what's happening. Now you can't laugh it off, you can't call it a fluke, and you can't call it meaningless. Now this is the direction of the series. Now these are how the two first games have been played in Boston, and you can feel as if this is what we're going to see. And you still might see a Celtic team come out on top, either this game or the rest of the series. It doesn't guarantee anything. But what it does guarantee, as far as success or you know, wins and losses. But what it does guarantee is that we are in for a battle, that we are in for a war, and that this is a series. The Knicks need to stamp game one with a game two performance. That cannot be a fluke. You can't go back to the Garden thinking you got lucky. Having Boston think you got lucky. Having the rest of the world think you got lucky. This is an enormous game to challenge the narrative that the Knicks don't belong and they got lucky in game number one. And the Celtics missed an ungodly number of threes. Tatum had an off night. Brown had an off night. Porzingis had to leave because of illness. We didn't even have our team. I don't want to hear that crap. I don't want to think that crap. I don't want to hear that crap. I don't want that to be the narrative. I don't want the Celtics to have a choice but to dismiss that as folly and understand that they are in a dogfight with a team that came to play, with a team that's there till the end, with a team that it doesn't matter that they fell down 20. It doesn't matter how many threes you make or miss. We are going to be in this thing. We are in your face. We are going to guard the perimeter at a different level than we did in the regular season because we're a different team than we were in the regular season. That's the message that needs to be sent. I think this series, the way I talked about it in game one, talking about it in game two now, it is a series of a message that needs to be sent to them. When you are this big a underdog, and I listened to him again talk about it today, Evan and Tiki, and they were talking, the Boston radio station was talking about it with them, about what kind of upset this would be. We're talking about the idea of the Knicks beating the Boston Celtics being a bigger upset than the New York Giants beating the undefeated New England Patriots, arguably the greatest NFL team I have ever seen. When you are in a series where that's the perception is David Goliath, the perception is one team doesn't belong. It has to be built on wins, clearly. But it's just as important to change that feeling inside the series as quickly as you can. And because of the nature of how game one went with losing Porzingis and missing 45 threes and blowing a 20-point lead, it can be dismissed as fluky. Tonight is the game the Knicks say this isn't a fluke. Strap up your boots. Because this is a series, and this one is going long, and we aren't backing down from nothing. And game one wasn't a fluke. Get your ass ready, because we're coming to bring it. That's what needs to be said tonight. I'll be extremely disappointed in this team, and I will be extremely disappointed in my opinion of the series moving forward if we see what we saw in the regular season. If we see a game where they couldn't match the intensity of a desperate Boston team, a more talented Boston team, a team that everybody expects to kick the crap out of the Knicks tonight. If we see that game most people expect, I'll be extremely disappointed. Go out there and take it, sure. Go out there and win, sure. Go out there and take a stranglehold in the series, that'd be nice. But as a Knicks fan, watching this team, falling in love with this group over the last couple of years, I'd love a win. I need a fight. I need a fight. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. We'll open with the Knicks. We'll get to the baseball. We didn't really get a chance, obviously, in reaction to game one, to talk about Devin Williams. I'd like to delve into that a little bit more, plus what we saw from the youth of the New York Yankees and how the Mets continue to struggle with runners in scoring position and who are the players really hurting the team. And not the ones we just like to talk about. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Quick break. We'll take your calls, and we'll get you all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show to start your day. Game day. Game day. Knicks, Celtics, tonight, 7 o'clock.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities. And no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Your official station to talk Jets. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 2:24. Mick Lonergan here with you on The Fan. All caught up in the Knicks, baby. I am pumped for tonight. I am looking for a battle. That's what I want. I want a fight. I want them to prove that game one wasn't fluky. Because I got to be honest, I was watching a little bit of, and I think Brian Windhorst does a good job. I think he had the reputation of kind of being LeBron's, water carrier for a long time. But I think he's gotten away from that. And I think he does a pretty good job. But I mean, he was, you could not have been without literally, and I don't want to make this all about Brian Windhorst, but like you can't. I was, especially after the game, watching the ESPN broadcast, like, you can't be more dismissive of that win than he was without flat out saying it doesn't matter. Like, he did everything he could without just flat out saying it doesn't matter, say it doesn't matter. Well, I mean, listen, they missed a ton of threes, and, the Knicks have never proven they can win a game like this, and they haven't been, it was just, he was stunned, and he didn't buy in. And that's just him. But then, again, Colin Cowherd, I'm watching all these guys, and it's like, oh, game one didn't mean anything. It does. Game one does mean something. Unless, of course, they get blown out tonight, and then maybe game one doesn't mean as much. They've got to follow up that performance and that win with at least a legitimate game where the winner is hanging in the balance. The game is hanging in the balance with a couple minutes left. They have got to put a fight to the Boston Celtics tonight, stamp this series, stamp game one's victory, and not have the excuses of no Porzingis, oh, we missed the record number of three-pointers that we missed, and all that crap. They lost to the Knicks. And this is going to be a tough series. That needs to be proven tonight. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Jose and Nagata. What's up?
Yes, good morning, Chris. How you doing today?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Good. So I'm going to make a couple points, and then you can comment. Last year we fell in love with the Knicks team because they were gritty. They didn't have as much talent, but they had a lot of fight, right? This year we have a team that now we're starting to see, like, after the Detroit series, that fight, that gritty, that, that we here, we outside type of mentality in terms of, like, if you see Mikal Bridges, you see, oh, this guy's very passive. But when he was taking an interview with, MSG, he was talking about, we built for this stuff,
yes.
Like, you could tell, like, these guys are taking on that persona where, now they're getting that type of grittiness. I'd like to see, there's a lot of contact with Cat. You could say, like, he's a flopper, he's this and that. There's a lot of contact there where, where you kind of don't see it called, so I don't think it's fair, but you're kind of seeing the transition to where Jalen Brunson is your clutch player, but he has players that can score and more talent than last year's team, where I think, we missed the point where we missed DiVincenzo. No, we don't miss DiVincenzo. We just got to see these guys step up because there's more talent this year than last year. Maybe less of a bench, but we have the number one clutch player in the NBA.
Yep.
And as far as Brian Windhorst, he's the biggest Knicks hater in the world. We've seen these guys comment about when we signed Jalen Brunson, how it was the biggest mistake.
Yeah.
How this is the
well,
guy.
Well, to be fair, I mean, listen, nobody. It's one thing to feel a certain way about a signing. I don't think even. I mean, I don't know how you felt. I thought it improved the Knicks. I thought he was going to be one of their better guards they've had in a long time. I didn't see this coming. I don't think anybody expected him to be this good.
I don't think anybody did. But when you see, we haven't had a point guard since, what, Mark Jackson? A true point guard.
I mean, I guess. Mark. I think that's you probably know, real. I think.
Yeah. Now,
Derek Harper. Was Derek Harper thing. Before Mark Jackson? And, you know, I mean, they've had some point guards.
Well, we've been trying to find a point guard who's all around is. You know, as a true point guard, we haven't had that since Wilkie Frazier. If you want to talk about scoring guard, mm-hmm. who can shoot it, who could dribble it, who could pass it, who can, you know, take over a game. Like, we haven't had that. And to see Jalen Brunson, like, you know, maybe he was drafted by Dallas, but listen, this guy, after 3 years or 4 years in Dallas, this is our guy. This is the guy who, you know, forget statues, forget anything. This is the guy who I think if you get past Boston and, you know, it's about who's the healthiest in the playoffs. And you look at the Cleveland series, you look at all these series, everybody's got a shot. Even the Nuggets have a shot with Jokic, who's an MVP every year, you know. So you can't talk down how these people, you know, say the Knicks, it was a fluke. It's not a fluke. You know, these guys are very talented.
No, well, I mean,
and against Boston.
Yeah,
you know,
but they got to come out tonight and establish that, though, because I'll tell you, if they lose by 25, it's going to be hard to make the argument that it wasn't a fluke and that the Celtics just missed every single three they took. And, you know, I mean, they blew the game and just choked away the game, and now it's going to be the rest of the series is going to look like game number two and look like it did in the regular season. Like, the Knicks do have to come out and stamp it, because I'll tell you the truth right now, like watching the Cavs game, right? The Cavs are up 20 points in that game. If that went that way and the Cavs won without their three starters by 20 points, everybody would be saying the series, yeah, I mean, listen, they got game one, but, you know, the Pacers are in trouble. But instead, they rallied back and took game two.
You look at the game against Boston, the first game. We missed how many free throws, you know?
I agree.
We how many turnovers, you know? That's Boston's game. It's shooting the threes. They live and die by the three. That's how they won the championship last year.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter in the playoffs how you win them. It just matters who's the first team to get to four and advance. And if the Knicks lose by 20 today, yeah, you'll hear all the chatter. But if they come in New York and win two out of three, it's about who wins four games, flat out, and that's it. And you know what? Carlos Rodon is your man, and I give you a lot of stuff for it on Twitter, mm-hmm. and I'm Hobby 203, but, man, you're right about Rodon. Rodon has been solid for the Yankees.
He's been great.
And I'm a true Mets fan, and he's been great for the Yankees. Thank you for your time.
You got it, buddy. I appreciate it. Yeah, no, listen. We can get into the Yankees in a little bit. I'll be totally honest with you. You know, I mean, you know how I am. I'm more positive than most. They're in first place. They've had their struggles. But to me, like, quite honestly, it's been Carlos Carrasco, Will Warren, and Devin Williams. If you take those, if you improve those three spots, and the first two were because they lost Cole and Luis Gil in spring training. And now they've lost Marcus Stroman, who probably isn't better than those two. But the bottom two of the rotation and Devin Williams are the reason that the New York Yankees don't have a six-game lead in the division. Like, because if you look at everything else, the offense has had games and series where it hasn't hit, sure. And clearly, you know, Volpe and Jazz were striking out a ton at times. But if you look, pick an offensive number. They lead the league. They lead the American League in runs. They lead the American League in home runs. They lead the American League in batting average. They lead the American League in OPS. They lead the American League in, like, they have seven different hitters throughout the lineup that have an above average OPS, including, yes, Anthony Volpe. Above average major league. Go back to last year when they were playing the Mets and Severino said they were two good hitters in the lineup. That's it. And look at how many other players in that lineup had an above average OPS. This entire team has an above average OPS over Major League Baseball. Wells does. Obviously, the stars, you know, But Grisham does, Wells does, Rice does, Jazz even does, Volpe does, obviously Goldschmidt does, Bellinger doesn't. But like almost the entire lineup. And what we saw in the game last night was we saw the youth come through. Like, I'm higher. I know everyone wants to call it dead. I've been arguing with people on Twitter. I don't know why I get into it. I'll pick like one person who said something to me and then we'll just go back and forth for an hour. I don't know why I do that. Sometimes just to kill some time. But like the feeling I get is that people think the Yankee season is over. Like, it's crazy. I got a guy tweeting me today that they should consider trading Judge at the deadline. Because they need to restock the farm system. This season clearly isn't going to be it. Like, what do you mean this season clearly isn't going to be it? They're in first place in a lousy American League with six playoff teams. This season clearly isn't going to be it. Have we lost our minds as Yankee fans? I know it's about winning the championship or nothing. I get that, right? If you don't win the championship, you're a loser. Fine, I get it. Okay? That doesn't mean that because you don't think they're good enough to win a championship on May 6th, that you should punt the season away. Because we have seen teams that you would determine not good enough to win championships on May 5th in very recent years go on to win the World Series. The New York Yankees offense has been better than we thought it would be by any metric you want to gauge it by. Any metric you want to gauge it by, the Yankee offense has been better than what we had thought it would be. And the bullpen, other than Williams, has been pretty damn good. And we got to figure out Williams. And we'll get into that because that's another conversation I want to get into. 888-808-1019. But let's get back to your Nick calls. Tim in Montclair. What's up, Tim?
Hey, how you doing, buddy? Thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
You got it, man.
I'm really excited. I'm a Knicks fan, you know, just like a lot of other people around the Tri-State area. I'm from Jersey. And one thing I wanted to bring the point to was that, remember the last game of the season last year where Boston had already locked up the number one seed, mm-hmm. and they basically started all of their starters to beat the Knicks because had they beat that game, they would have played the Knicks in the first round. So they brought out all their guns, and the Knicks actually fought back and won that game. So I knew then that the Knicks had really, you know, some aggression towards them because that game, they could have rest their starters. They could have just ran with the second string guys and everything else on that last game. But they looked at it like, you know, if we beat the Knicks in this last game of the season, we'll have them in the first round and we'll have our easiest pass like they pretty much predicted. But the Knicks said, no, we're not having it. And they took that same energy, through the combination of the first round with the Pistons, that gave them that extra edge. That's why they went in there. Now, I definitely agree with you. The second game, Boston's going to throw everything that they can at them because this is actually, the pressure's on them now because they underestimated the Knicks for the second time.
Yeah.
And this time, they're going to try to come in, okay, we're going to be ready for them and everything. But I think that the Knicks just pretty much are so ready for them because of last year and what went on this year. I think it's like, they're going to have to really, really bring all their guns. And they have to play a perfect game, pretty much. And that's what Boston has to do.
Oh, no. Boston doesn't have to play a perfect game to beat the Knicks. Come on. Let's be fair. You think they have to play a perfect game to beat the Knicks? I think the Knicks have to play a perfect game to beat Boston in this game.
Okay, I agree with you with that. But they're going to have to match, I think, the Knicks' intensity. They have to match the Knicks' hunger. And they have to match the Knicks' desire of, we really want this because, mm-hmm. again, I think Boston just doesn't respect them.
That's true. Listen, if I'm going to tell you that the regular season this year was meaningless, I can't go back to last year and tell you I'm going to get any great meaning from it. I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate it. But if we're going to dismiss them getting there, you can't tell me last year was all that important and then dismiss or point to a regular season game last year and tell you how much it takes from it, and then dismiss the idea that they kicked the ever-loving crap out of the Knicks all this season. Like, last season, one, it's a different team. So, I appreciate what you're trying to say there. I just don't think it carries much water in this situation. I think there's clearly an element of underestimating. There's clearly an element of we are very comfortable against this team, and we've beat this team. That's part of it. And that, you know, they're obviously not going to do that now because they're desperate. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, but it's, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like, I still want to see, you're talking as if you know that the intensity and hunger the Knicks are going to come out with in game two is going to just be so much that the Celtics are going to have to match it. I hope so. That's what I'm calling for. But, like, let's see. They're going to have to go do that. They did it against the Pistons on most nights. I get it. Really, not the start of games. Game five, they didn't have that intensity and that fire and that hunger. They're going to have to come out with that tonight. That's what I want to see. And listen, I don't think the Celtics have to play a perfect game at all. I think if you want to talk about who has to play a perfect game to win tonight, the Knicks have to play the perfect game. The Knicks have to make their free throws. The Knicks have to limit the turnovers. The Knicks can't allow 19 offensive rebounds and second chance opportunities. Like, that's what has to change. Because if those things remain, like, they're going to lose this game. And that's... And here's, like, I'm almost okay with a loss. It would be too much to expect a win. I'm not going to be disappointed or suddenly feel like the series is over if the Knicks go out and lose tonight in any manner, necessarily. But if they go out and get their ass kicked and we don't see that fight and we don't see some of these things change and we don't see a better team on the boards and we don't see less turnovers and we don't see more foul shots and made and we don't see the same kind of intensity and defensive stuff and we see a blowout and we see the Knicks take their foot off the gas and just accept the idea they got game number one and get ready for game number three, it's going to feel like game number one was a fluke. And everybody who points to that game number one being a fluke or that this series is going to go how we all expected, don't worry about it. Game number one is just the aberration. The Knicks were going to get a game and they just happened to get it in game one. All those people are going to have the wins at their sails after game number two, including the Boston Celtics, who can easily tell themselves, well, we took them for granted. We lost Porzingis. We missed all our threes. That's it. That's why we lost. It's not because the Knicks are anything we can't handle. It's not because Jalen Brunson's the best closer in the game. It's not because Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby present problems for us. It's because we didn't really think they were good because we dominated them in the regular season. Porzingis left the game with an illness, and we just happened to have an off-night shooting. That they can't leave. That's what I want. Boston cannot leave game number two with that mindset. The Boston Celtics cannot leave game number two saying to themselves, well, listen, this really isn't a series. Game number one was a fluke. Again, Porzingis, off-night shooting, and probably underestimated the Knicks a little bit. Like, that can't be the mindset heading to New York. The mindset has to be, at the bare minimum, whew, thank God we got out of this building with a freaking win. These Knicks are serious, huh? Like, that has to be, at the bare minimum, the mindset of the Boston Celtics. And they put their head on the pillow tonight knowing they are in for a battle for two games in Madison Square Garden. Like, that's what has to be set tonight. Game number one has to be stamped, and the idea that the Celtics are in for a dogfight has to be stamped tonight.
Catch all the play-by-play with Susan Waldman and Dave Sims on the home of Yankees Radio, The Fan.
Nick Monaco here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. And, yeah, I mean, listen, more than just a fight, I want to see some adjustments, too. Listen, there's always things to learn. This, you know, it was the coach's dream. Right? The coach's dream is you get the victory and you still have a lot of talking points to go over your team. Right? The Bill Belichick. You want to win, but you also want to have enough things to go wrong where you could yell at your team on Monday. And there's still things we have to, you know, try and figure out. The Knicks have to try and figure out. Obviously, the free throw shooting, I don't know if there's anything to figure out there. They just need to be better at it, unless you're talking about how they're going to handle the Hakimich situation, which I don't know what the answer to that is, to be quite honest with you. And I know there's a debate or a conversation around whether it's good or not for basketball, I think that's immaterial. We could have that conversation if you like it in the game. Should you be able to foul poor foul shooters off ball? And when you're in the bonus, put them at the line. Is it basketball? No. I mean, you know, we see the same thing at the end of games. Is the fouling at the end of the games basketball? No. I think it's the responsibility. Like we talked a lot about this with the shift, but that's with Major League Baseball. And we're doing it with the tush push right now. It's good. That's a good point, Fleeks. That's kind of very similar. That's more of a universal thing, I think, than just like one or two guys in the league. Like how many guys like are as bad at shooting foul shots as Mitch Robinson in today's game? I know Shaq obviously was one of them, but Shaq was a dominant force. Like Mitch Robinson isn't good enough to not be able to hit foul shots. Like he's got to figure it out. So they got to figure out, and Tibbs has to figure out exactly how he wants to handle that situation. They've got to be better on the offensive glass, on the defensive glass, rather. They have to figure out a way to limit possessions. Like they can't continue to give up second-chance points the way they did in Game 1. There's a lot of things that they need to work on. And again, make no mistake, this is going to be a damn near impossible game to win. This is I make no misconceptions. I am not telling – I don't expect the Knicks to win this game. They will surprise me when they win this one. To take both on the road from the Boston Celtics, there's a reason they're favorites. There is a reason so many Knicks fans were, you know, trying to weigh the joy of beating the Pistons with what we all assume is coming. There's a reason for it. Game one makes me feel a hell of a lot better about their chances. Game one makes it a series. But it doesn't change the fact of how we all felt going into it that the Celtics are the better team. And they are the desperate team. And they are the home team. And they are now going to get Porzingis back, who absolutely killed the Knicks the last time they saw them in the regular season, who is unafraid, who can shoot, who's long enough to defend. Like, Porzingis presents a problem. And this is going to be a tough game to win. But I want to see improvements in the areas that cost them in game one. Obviously, didn't cost them ultimately. They got the win. But the issues they had, the problems they had issues with, I need some adjustments. We got to figure out. I want to see how they handle the Hakimich situation. But ultimately, there's got to be another stretch of this game where the Celtics are scared. I need another shot of fear into the Boston Celtics, and we have to put it at a place where we can't dismiss game one as a fluke. Because I know here we're all amped up. We're all amped up. We're Knicks fans. We're not going to call it a fluke. We're going to talk about how great it was and how great Jalen Brunson was and what an incredible win it was. And, you know, but the Boston Celtics are, I promise you, this is a really confident group. They are defending champs, and they have kicked the ever-loving crap out of the New York Knicks. They believe it is a fluke. I went into game one talking about how it had to be this, put a scare into him, how important game one was. You take game one, suddenly it's a different series. Well, and I went on and on about it, and while I agreed with it, I have to admit, now that I'm a day away from it, in the manner in which it happened, for them to miss a record-breaking number of threes, now I know that's their game, and I'm not saying the Knicks forced them into changing their style, and like that would be different. If the Knicks force them into missing 45 threes, I feel even differently about it. But I have to be honest. The idea that Porzingis left and that they had such a miserable shooting night, and there are some other key metrics where they did have advantage over the Knicks, it's less of a game changer just because people are going to, like, I don't think the Celtics are overly worried. I thought I would strike fear into the Celtics with a game one victory. And I think because of the manner in which it happened, overtime, at one point getting the 20-point lead and then blowing it, missing as many threes as they did, it's easy to dismiss for the Boston Celtics. I want a game two they can't dismiss. Stefan in Iowa. What's up, Stefan?
Hey, Chris, man. Love the show, man. I've been starting listening to you two football seasons ago and fell in love with it.
Thank you. That's pretty much when I started the overnight. So thanks for being with me from the beginning. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. I'm also, I'm a huge, huge Knicks fan. Only Knicks fan in Des Moines, Iowa. Can't believe it.
It's just you?
Yeah, it's literally just me. Everybody's literally Bulls are yelling about Ant-Man. Like, it's crazy in my small town. So, anyway, I just want to say, yeah, Latrell Sprewell, Stephon Marbury are my two biggest Knicks players. Like, go Knicks. I don't like Boston. We're going to take it in the Garden. I don't care what anybody says. The game was not a fluke. We were in there. Jalen Brunson, OG Anunoby, everybody going to take it in the Garden. Game two. Love the show. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, no problem, man. Thank you for pumping it up out in Iowa. Can I just have one question for you.
Yes, sir.
Is this heaven?
I no, it's Iowa.
Okay. Thank you very much, Stephon. I had to say it. No, it's Iowa. I love that movie. I was getting all weepy watching it with my sons the other day. Just, you know, obviously, not to get into it. I lost my father when I was younger. Just that movie, it's just the best. Touches all the heartstrings. The only problem is, and I don't know if I... The only problem is, and I remember Mike... I had a discussion with Mike about this on air. One of my few, because whenever I would talk on air with Mike, it would be mainly about movies, or like we had a big thing about, we had a conversation about Star Wars. He had no understanding of Star Wars. Rocky, he hated every other Rocky pretty much, but Rocky 1. He might have been okay with 2 as well, but he hated, you know, 3 and 4. He thought they were dopey, and, you know, I'm a huge... Clubber Lang is like the greatest sports villain of all time, and only second to maybe Ivan Drago. So like I'm all about 3 and 4. But I remember having a conversation about Field of Dreams, and that Shoeless Joe Jackson is a left-handed hitter, and Ray Liotta in the movie hits right-handed. And I guess they wanted Ray Liotta, and they couldn't get him. I don't know. I didn't even bother to check up on this, why it's the mistake. But you have to admit, it's a pretty big problem. Like, I love Field of Dreams, and I know it's a movie and you can dismiss it, and, you know, nobody in the audience really knows Shoeless Joe Jackson. He played in the 1910s, that he was a left-handed hitter. But if you are going to make a stink about Shoeless Joe Jackson to the point they do in that movie, they go over every number he had, how he became Shoeless, why he got the name Shoeless Joe, his numbers in the 1919 World Series to dispute the idea he threw it. Like, they go over everything about Shoeless Joe Jackson. Like, they go over it. There's an entire montage scene where he's talking to his daughter specifically about Shoeless Joe Jackson. And then they get him, and he's hitting the wrong side of the plate. Like, it is a big flaw. It is a major, major flaw. But if you can overlook that, Field of Dreams is one classic film. But, yeah, Mike was beside himself one day. He's in right-handed. You couldn't teach Ray Liotta how to hit left-handed. It's only a couple swings. It's not like he's playing baseball throughout the movie.
You gotta be kidding me.
You gotta be kidding me. And I guess the conclave is starting soon. Mike's podcast is gonna be all over that. And then I forgot to mention this with this whole 100 man versus 100 humans versus gorilla, which I feel like we've kind of put an answer to, by
gorilla.
The way. Gorilla. We kind of have put an answer to it. I've seen enough, like, legitimate scientists say that there's no doubt that 100 men would win strictly because the gorilla doesn't have the stamina to continue to take on wave of after wave of, like, 10 men. Like, if you just threw 10 men at a time at the gorilla, he would take care of them easy, and he would probably take care of the first wave of 10, second wave of 10, maybe even the third wave of 10. But he's just not – gorillas aren't built – to last that long. So I feel like we've had an answer to this question that somehow has circled the media, but it actually brings me to the beginning of my career. As our last caller just mentioned, being with me since the overnight, the beginning of really me becoming a host on The Fan started with the Mac and Mons podcast, that we had an idea to do what, you know, Jerry and Al were doing for the morning show with Boomer and Carton, and having this recap show afterwards, and or a podcast where they would go over what happened on the show. So we had this idea of doing, you know, the two of us, who are obviously the producer and board op, or associate producer, as it said on my email, of Mike Francesa, and we would have this
you know, my Mac and Mons, only because it sounded better. Listen, you're asking me. I think Mac and Mons sounds better, but you know, even though Monzo was the producer, but so it was Mac and Mons, and we would, you know, do what happened on the show, tell behind the scenes stories of WFAN. We would talk a lot about Minko, and we would have guests. You know, we did a podcast for a while. And hearing that and having Chernoff hear that was kind of the beginnings of, and Mike heard it and thought I sounded good. And he started to kind of be in my corner about becoming a host, and I could go to him with sound and different things. And Chernoff started giving me weekend holiday shifts and then weekend shifts. And then finally the full-time Saturday thing. But it all started with the Mac and Mons podcast and the
McGonagall.
The first ever Mac and Mons podcast has two distinct things that I find very interesting. One, I'll just tell you real quick. We all know Anne Ligori. The very first Mac and Mons podcast we did was after, it was right this time of year, right? Memorial Day. I think that's when this all happened. If I'm wrong with my timelines now, it's going to look stupid. But it was anyway, we rented a house. Me and my friends rented a house in the Hamptons. I believe it was Memorial Day weekend. It could have just been any weekend. But we rented a house in the Hamptons and it had a pool in the backyard. We went out to dinner and everything, but we walk into the house and we're going through the house and I'm in the garage. Someone, we wanted to find if there was a cooler or something. We wanted to have an extra cooler. I'm looking through the garage and all of a sudden my wife screams, "Hey, I think you know this person." I'm like, "What do you mean?" She's like, "I think you know the person who lives here." I'm like, "Really?" I'm like, "Yeah." So I start walking inside and there's like a kind of a wall with a bunch of awards and pictures. And I'm like, "This is Anne Ligori's house. I rented Anne Ligori's house. What are the odds that I would rent a random house in the Hamptons?" I had nothing to do with it. My buddy picked it out, rented it, and I'm walking through the house, and it's nothing but like pictures of Anne Ligori and all the awards she's won, and pictures of her and Bon Jovi, and everything was golf. Like down to the soap dispenser in the bathroom was a little guy putting. Like everything was golf. I swear, everything was golf. She had a putting green in her backyard next to the pool. It's a beautiful house, but I randomly rented a house, and it was Anne Ligori's house. I remember that being part of the first podcast, and the other part of the first podcast was reacting to the show that day, and it was the Harambe getting that gorilla being put down because of the incident at the zoo. And
gorilla.
Mike just, "I don't understand. These people are really sad about the gorilla?
Gorilla.
I mean, there was a kid in there, and we were all sad about the gorilla?
Gorilla."
I remember. And that was the first podcast. The first Mac and Mons podcast was about how we had no idea that the show was going to be overtaken by a gorilla and that I had stayed the weekend before at Anne Ligori's house. That was the first Mac and Mons podcast. I remember there was like another event. For some reason, I want to say it had something to do with Kobe Bryant. I don't know if it was around the time he scored the 80-point game or his retirement. I feel like something happened with Kobe Bryant and that we were expecting the show to be about Kobe, to have a significant part of the show be about Kobe, or, you know, one of the main topics of the show be about Kobe, because I remember that being the line. Like, we were expecting this show to be something completely different, and the next thing you know, we're talking about this gorilla. I just remember that being the podcast.
That probably was it, because Kobe retired at the end of the 16th season, and the Harambe stuff happened May 28th, 2016.
Yeah, so maybe it was Kobe retirement. Like, there was something, I just, in my mind, I remember we expected the show to go, that was like the opening of the podcast. One of those days where you expect the show to go a certain way, and before you know it, there's an incident at a zoo, and suddenly that's the entire show with Mike yelling about gorillas, and he doesn't understand how the public is more concerned about the gorilla instead of the
gorilla.
instead of the young child. That was it. Oh my God, that was funny. 888-808-1019. So that was the beginnings. And now that it's come full circle with 100 men versus a gorilla. Did you get all wrapped up in this 100 man? I feel like there's been better ones. Like the dress was better.
There's a chance this is the first time Marco's hearing about it.
No, unfortunately. Been asked this on numerous shows.
Oh,
as I pop in and out, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have an answer?
Yeah. I mean, it's non-specific. You're talking about 100 regular people the gorilla is going to take out. It's not even close.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think we've come to a conclusion that you're incorrect.
Yeah, you're wrong.
I don't think gorillas.
You know why?
are built to fight 100 men.
Here's your problem.
They're not the stamina.
You're assuming that these 100 people are going to work together. They won't.
Well, I mean, that's
no, they won't. They'll feed each other to the gorilla to try to survive.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a problem.
I don't. What do you mean to try and survive? You're going to feed him and say, here, take him as,
no,
as sacrifice? They will, if you leave me alone, I don't think the gorilla is willing to bargain.
If you're talking about, you know, going in, some people are going to die.
Yes.
That's like
that's
military.
The process,
yeah, and that's the military thought process.
Yeah.
Some of us are going to die, but we're going to work this thing together and eventually we'll come out on top.
Yeah.
That's military.
Yeah.
You get 100 random people, some people are going to die. It ain't going to be me. So you die, and I'll eventually get over there when the gorilla's out. That's what the thought process is.
Right.
I'm not dying.
Right.
So no one's going to go in first. You got to have a line of defense. No one's going to take the Marine mentality that they're storming the beach for the gorilla. It's not going to happen.
But it's going to hit you at some point that if I don't, we're going to die anyway. I can't just outweigh the gorilla.
Did you watch Saving Private Ryan? Remember the scene with Matt Damon when he's in the fetal position screaming?
Yeah.
That's what 100 people are going to do when that gorilla takes somebody's arm off. That's what they're going to do.
I don't know.
That's regular people.
Yeah.
Military people. Navy SEALs. They'll take the gorilla down because they understand the process. Some of us aren't going to make it. 100 regular people, you ain't going to make it. Not me.
But I think the point wasn't like, you know, gorilla versus 100, you know, women and school children. It was like 100, like, human beings prepared to fight the gorilla.
No,
it's not just like take 100 random people, the same people that answered the top five questions of the most annoying thing your husband does in bed for a game show.
You think
it's not the Family
Feud?
It's not the 100 people top answer on the board Family Feud 100 people. It's like 100 people ready to fight the gorilla.
This is the Mike Tyson line. Everybody thinks they're ready until they get punched in the face.
But maybe the gorilla.
There is no way that regular people are ready to fight a gorilla. You can say you are. You can think you
are. No, of course not.
Get in there with the gorilla.
I'm
telling you. Yeah. Fetal position.
Yeah.
Screaming out loud.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to do. That's what you're going to do.
I understand that. But
no, I don't think you do. That's the problem. I think everybody thinks that they're a tough guy. Get in there with a gorilla.
No, you're going to be terrified. I get this.
Gorilla. Okay.
I understand. But I'm just saying. Like,
I don't think you do.
If you go into it knowing that, hey, we have to fight this gorilla or we're going to die.
Right.
Like, what do you?
Oh, that's great. That's boardroom stuff. That's for Post-its.
Okay.
Stand in there with 100 people.
Yeah,
see the gorilla rip somebody's arm off.
Yeah.
Tell me you're ready to go. You're not.
Okay.
When you're soiling yourself in the corner, then you're going to talk about the gorilla.
I understand.
And we'll all watch. Because that's a screw.
So you think how long does it take to go through 100 people? He's going to slowly, all these 100 people are just going to lay on the floor and he's going to walk by and just like stomp on them?
I don't think the gorilla is going to come after any of them. They're going to have to go to him.
Okay. Well, listen, if we're playing this game where you could just hang out on the sidelines like Carl Anthony Towns and be avoiding it.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can make the gorilla do something?
No, but I'm saying the whole point is...
The whole point is fantasy. That's the point.
Well, that's the question.
And I'm telling you the answer.
You're dismissing the question.
Navy SEALs?
You're trying to get around answering the question by saying, I can't make the gorilla fight.
Look.
No. We got to go to break.
Gorilla against regular people, gorilla. Gorilla against Navy SEALs, Navy SEALs.
But you can't make the gorilla fight either. So what,
it doesn't matter. The Navy SEALs have a plan. They'll have an idea. And they will fight together. 100 regular people will not fight together. They don't care about each other.
So you'll say,
they care about survival.
I understand that, but never mind. Because you're making it sound like, all right, he'll kill the first 15 and the rest will just sit around like, it's okay, here, have my clothing. Take care. And the gorilla's going to be like, ugh, and then just not fight.
We'll see.
Okay.